You're listening to All the Best. I'm Maddie McQueen. A content warning, I'm about to talk a little bit about sexual harassment and assault. When I was a teenager, I used to spend all of my spare time and money on going to see bands. I loved it. I still do. When I think about the things I've missed most in 2020, live music is near the top of the list. That said, live music venues don't always feel like a safe environment. When I think back to my mid to late teens, I couldn't even begin to count the shows where I was harassed, belittled, and touched inappropriately by men in the crowd. But even though I often felt uncomfortable, I still came back. I put up with a lot of bullshit because I'd developed emotional connections with the musicians I was going to see. I looked up to them, I trusted them, and they made me feel safe. But, seemingly over and over again, that trust I built up has been shattered by allegations of harassment and assault. The musicians I looked up to were doing the same thing that gross people in the crowd had been doing to me, which made me feel emotionally betrayed. It also made me question whether I had any right to feel that way. I don't know these people, I've never met them, and I had no good reason to put my trust in them, but I did. I had built up this idea of who they were in my head, and I'd developed emotional connections with these imaginary people. It wasn't real. This week, we're talking about trust. What leads us to place our trust in people, and what happens when we find out that the trust was misplaced. In our first story, Esther makes the costly mistake of trusting strangers on the internet. A content warning, this episode contains swears.
My partner, who's Gertie's dad, he says we make out. I say we lovingly caress and kiss. That's probably the weirdest thing. I don't know. I kiss her a lot. It's weird. Also, she sleeps in our bed, which is not that weird anymore.
If there's one thing you should know about Esther, it's that she sometimes gets really obsessed with certain things. She's obsessed with Waxahachie's latest album. She's obsessed with the movie Sister Act 2.
I got the flow. Y'all gotta go. So go get your bags so we can go. Ho, ho.
And she's really, really obsessed with her dog.
Gertie. So her full name is Gertrude Stein. And she is a nearly three-year-old Havanese. She's a teeny tiny angel.
Gertie, her dog, has her own Instagram page. She has t-shirts with her face on them. And a jokey commissioned portrait of her as U.S. Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. You might have noticed that Esther said Gertie is nearly 3 years old, which means there'll be a birthday party soon, probably on Zoom.
She's fully black and then she has like white paws and white eyebrows and a white little mouth, like a teddy bear.
When the first lockdown happened in Melbourne in March, one silver lining for Esther was that at least she could spend more time with Gertie.
So when COVID started, we were at home more, as everyone was, obviously. And she was really, really happy. She was kind of confused for a week. She was like, why? Did you guys get fired? but then she just eased into it because she's just so happy when people are around.
Having Gertie around also helped Esther to deal with the challenges of being on lockdown.
Everyone was feeling vulnerable. Like, I don't know anyone that I've spoken to in any country, you know, talking to friends from all over the world who hasn't felt just kind of like emotionally a little fragile and vulnerable throughout all of this. And I'll tell you what, dogs are a really good way to make you feel a little more grounded and to make you feel a little more, you know, connected and less alone, which is kind of what we all need during COVID.
After a few weeks, though, Esther started to wonder what would happen to Gertie once they had to go back to the office and she'd be left at home alone again.
She has real bad like separation anxiety. So she's just literally always next to us. Like when I go to the bathroom to pee, she jumps on my lap. Like she doesn't like being away from us.
To help both Gertie and herself handle all the changes, Esther and her partner had an idea.
We'd been thinking about getting another dog for a while and it just seemed like the perfect time to do it. Because, you know, you could be home to train them and the first couple of weeks are always really tiring because you have to get up in the night to take them out to pee and all that kind of stuff.
But there was a problem.
Everyone else in the world had the exact same idea that we did. So it was really difficult to find dogs. because they'd all kind of gotten snapped up, and the prices started going up like exponentially. It's like, you know, if a dog was previously $2,000, which is pretty standard, it was now $7,500. And we looked into rescuing as well, but the shelters were empty. Like, there's literally, which is good that there's no dogs that are, like, you know, in danger of being put down. But it was, yeah, just, like, increasingly difficult to find a puppy.
After Esther tried looking for dogs in Victoria, she expanded her search to other states. But still, no luck.
Because of COVID, a lot of breeders weren't flying because there was different restrictions in different states. So that also made it challenging.
So Esther tried with the reputable breeders first, then moved on to lesser known ones. At one point, she even started looking at dodgy classified ads in the Trading Post, but she got immediately turned off by the sketchy photos and language they were using. She persisted though, and eventually an oasis in the online desert appeared in front of her.
And then we found this website and we were like, oh my God, look, it's like a properly coded website and there's photos of the animals, and it's called abbyspethome.com. I was so impressed because I was like, look, it's like it's such a nice looking website. And we were kind of like, yeah, awesome. And the price was also on the lower end. It wasn't unbelievably cheap, but it was on the lower end.
So she filled out the contact form on the website, got in touch with the breeder, who was different from the one who bred Gertie. But everything seemed to be going well.
And the thing is when we got Gertie, it was the same. We did everything by email. So they sent us photos of her. We decided that we liked her and we wanted to purchase her. And it was pretty much all done by email until we were getting to the point of payment. And then the breeder called me. That's really the first time that I'd spoken to the breeder on the phone. And this was kind of playing out no differently. So no red flags for me so far.
A breeder with a dog available when no others do, willing to fly interstate when no others were, and also relatively cheap. Esther spoke to her best friend about it, who noticed that it all seemed too good to be true. She decided to at least get the breeder on the phone first.
So there was a phone number in the signature of the email, and I called it. And it was like it went to voicemail, and the voicemail message was like an international, it was like an American accent instead of an Australian accent. It sounded like an international phone number, essentially.
The breeder got back in touch with Esther by email, told her that they were based in Penrith, near Sydney, and answered all her other questions. Esther was still not 100% sure, but she decided to go ahead and transfer the money.
So we sent her the money for the dog, and we sent her the money for the flights for the dog. And we did that on a Wednesday, and the dog was supposed to come on a Friday, on that Friday. So 2 days later.
Come Friday, the dog hadn't arrived, and she hadn't heard anything from the breeder.
So it was really Friday morning that I started realizing, like, this doesn't feel right. And I was talking to my partner about it, and he was like, no, I'm sure it's fine. Like, everything's fucked with COVID. Like, humans aren't getting on flights. How are they supposed to put puppies on flights, you know? So we kept waiting and waiting. And then eventually, by the time it was midday, which is when the dog was supposed to arrive, I reverse Google image searched one of the photos of the dog that the breeder had sent us, and it turned up on a website based in Ohio in the US. I was like, oh my God, fuck. And so I ran into the office where my partner was, and I was like, oh my God, we've got scammed. And he was like, what? but it was such a slow burn. It was like tick, 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 tick. And then suddenly, you know, there's all these things that are kind of red flags, but then suddenly everything kind of just like, is a symphony of fact, and you're like, ah, of course.
After talking to the police, Esther learned that there had been more than $500,000 worth of pet scams throughout Australia since the pandemic started. Scammers were using the uncertainty of the situation. They were exploiting people's emotions under lockdown. Esther filed a police report, and the bank agreed to give her the money back, though the scammers were never caught. And even more than the money, what bothered her was losing the emotional connection she had already established with the new dog.
We went and got his collar, and we went and got his bed, and we went and got treats and all of that kind of stuff. And, you know, you grew really attached to this thing that doesn't exist. And the other thing is also just like, I felt so unbelievably stupid, like so unbelievably stupid. I don't know. I think a lot of the time you just like, you get excited about a thing and you stop looking at things kind of critically. But yeah, that's kind of, I guess, the biggest lesson.
There was also the sheer embarrassment and shame.
You tell everyone, and also because of like the internet and being able to message everyone, you send photos and everyone's like, he looks like a Lenny, or like, he's a buster. And people get emotionally invested on the journey as well. And then come that Friday and everyone's like, where is he? Where is he? Having to be like, oh, it was, yeah, he wasn't real. Yeah, it was pretty emotionally draining, like on top of COVID.
At the same time, in the process of dealing with the scam, Esther was able to gain some perspective. Even in times of loss, it's important to appreciate what you do have. And for Esther, there is always Gertie.
That story was produced by Dan Simo. The supervising producer was Mike Williams. You're listening to All the Best. I'm Maddie McQueen. All the Best is about training emerging Australian storytellers in the art of audio. If you'd like to be a part of the show, you can start by pitching to us at allthebestradio.com. We'll pair you with one of our supervising producers to help make your story. In our second story, David doesn't get the chance to decide whether or not to trust the people around him. He just has to trust them.
Well, I'll never forget, like 12 years ago, when I was getting a private flight through the Kimberleys, except it was with the Royal Flying Doctors, and credit to them. But at the time, I was first mate on a landing barge, just delivering fuel and stores and cargo through the remote areas of the Kimberleys. One of our runs was Troughton Island. It was a beautiful island, surrounded by coral reef, about 16 k's off the mainland. Now, on this particular delivery voyage, there was spring tides and we're going to do some load of work on the barge landing, basically like sandy boat ramp. So we've gone in late one afternoon, dropped off the front end loader and the machinery, anchor the barge off in the channel, ready for an early start. Bright and early, me and myself and the engineer, crack of dawn, out there in the tinny, into the shore. So his job was the front end loader, and I'm keeping the dinghy afloat. So it's about 7 metres of tide range, so it just dries out there real quick. So my job was to keep the dinghy afloat, and with the tide running out over the reef, several large resident crocodiles in the area, I was keeping the dinghy no more than knee-deep of water throughout the morning. So that required moving the anchor and the tinny over and over and over again just to keep it in the water. And then, finally, about 8 o'clock, tides turned. This is the moment I've been waiting for all morning. See, there's four of us living on this boat. We've got one toilet, one shower, and they're tiny, about as big as this couch. So I'm going to get to go up to the residence quarters this morning and go about morning business, undisturbed, looking over the ocean. So back to the anchor shift. So out I go. I'm treading over the reef, walking out, which by then was about three times as far as this stage with all you people. And gone to grab the anchor and I'm steadying myself on the reef. If anyone's walked over the coral reef, you know how hard it is to walk out there barefoot. And put my hand down and feel a suction cap on my thumb. So I grabbed the anchor, looked over, and I've got my hand fair on this octopus that's all of a sudden gone light blue circles all over it. So it was not quite as big as my hand, but it was pretty bloody big. And if anyone knows how full on the debt blittering octopus are, I did. It's like, well, fuck, that was close. It didn't bite me. And if everyone's been bitten by a squid or an octopus previously, you know you've been bitten because it hurts like a parrot. So I thought, I carried the anchor ashore. I thought, geez, that was close. Didn't bite me. So I'm wandering up. It's 500 metres to the caretaker's residence. I look over. Paul's going flat out in the front end loader. I'm going for my morning shit. I'm wandering up and about 200 metres up dirt road, thinking that was close. Next thing I'm dizzy and nauseous and I'm thinking, far out. And I look around, I'm by myself. The rest of the crew, all two of them are on the barge sleeping because they're too lazy. And so me and Paul were working. So I was like, do you hastily walk, run, whatever? I don't know. So I'm thinking, fuck, 300 metres to go. Walk up there. It's 8 o'clock in the morning. So I made it to the door. Knock, knock, knock on there. These people haven't seen anyone for 4 weeks. So fucking, they open the door. The first thing they want to do is talk. So I've just walked straight through, laid on the floor in the lounge, knowing full well if it gets any worse, they're going to have to breathe for me. So I said, excuse me, I've just been touched a blithering octopus, feeling dizzy, nauseous, and if I pass out, please, you're breathing for me. And they're like, well, what else do we do? I said, just keep me fucking alive. I said, So it's been a while, 12 years, so I've forgotten their names. But anyway, old mate and old mate's wife. So old mate's wife's on the sat phone ringing the flying doctors like pretty well right then. And old mate's talking to me and describing what happened. I just put my hand on there, didn't feel a bite. Anyway, I'm not feeling right. And normally wouldn't even worry about this, but I was dizzy. So they rang there, the crew, and mind you, this is Easter Monday. Next, you know, she gets the phone. They won't be too long, just 4 hours. Like, mind you, we're in the middle of nowhere now. It's 4 hours. Like, righto. Next, you know, the ship's crew, the other two of them are on their way up, and we're all stuck in this little donger. I'm lying on the floor. They're looking at me like I'm some kind of specimen on the floor. And so then the owners, the other bloke, his wife, rings up the barge company, my boss, tells him what happened. How about I just divert an offshore helicopter for you, pick you up straight away and take you to hospital? But there won't be anyone else. You'll just be cargo. Well, what did I want to do? Well, I can't make a decision. So by then, at that time, I've got the remaining crew members standing there. No offence to anyone that's old, but the youngest was 55. So they're there. I thought I was panicking because I was. My heart was just, like, beating. You could see it. And they're just chain-smoking. So here I am. If I need CPR, I'm going to get more cigarette smoke in my lungs right now than fresh air. So I said, I'll take my chances with the four of you guys. Best of luck, please. I've got a young family. So 10 minutes has gone by now, so I thought, I'm still alive. I'll ring my wife, so I'm all okay. As far as I'm concerned, I'm good. Ring my wife, didn't make things better. Said to her what happened. I got four young spring chickens here, chain smoking, looking after me. And don't fear. I don't remember what she exactly said to me that day, but she just remembers Terry Irwin had just lost Steve. And we had a young daughter. And here I am, laying on the floor. So then I was all okay. The flying doctors arrived 4 hours later. Next thing you know, they'd roll through the door with a bloody mobile hospital. Super efficient, credit to them. Now they come, and within about 30 seconds, I had more sensors on than a V8 Land Cruiser on my chest. I had tubes poked in everywhere, in my legs. I was strapped into the stretcher like a criminal and banged into the plane. Next thing, I'm in the plane, all of in about 38 seconds. The plane flashes up. The nurse is running through, checking my blood pressure and all the other stuff, and I don't really remember, but all I just remember is a port engine just squealing its freaking head off. So I'm strapped in the stretcher like a straitjacket and the engine's like, I don't like flying. And they stopped the plane. So here I am, finally got safety here, plane breaks down. And I can only just twist my head because I couldn't move my shoulders at all. And I look over and there's my engineer because back, this is 12 years ago, so work health and safety wasn't strict. So Paul's there, thongs, shorts, no shirt. My engineer, and helping the pilots fix the plane. So I was just like, to the nurse, I've lived through today. You're going to give me a fucking heart attack if he's fixing the plane. Can you let me know what he's doing? It's okay. Pilots are doing the work. Okay. He looks like he's got the spanners. But so next you know, they've shut the fuselage, planes flashed up, no more squealing. It was just a loose belt, they told me. And off we went. So then all day, I mean, then I literally just passed out in the plane. I don't remember. I woke up in Derby. I said, here we are, checked in Derby Hospital. And that whole day, I've just thankfully hang on to what I was going to that caretaker's office for the first start in the morning. It was just like the biggest relief that afternoon when I thought, I'm alive. Still didn't get to hang it like a nice morning pleasure, undisturbed. It was never undisturbed. But anyway, credit to the people that did help me through focusing and maintaining my sanity and trying to remain calm, because it's not easy when you know that anything can happen right now and you can't prepare for it. You're just going to pass out. So, yeah, that's my story. The Blue Ring Octopus didn't beat me. I'm here to tell the story, and thanks for listening.
That story was told by David Pears. It was produced by Laurie Uden. David told this story at Spun, a live storytelling night presented by Story Projects in the Northern Territory. You can subscribe to the Spun Stories podcast and find out more about the Spun Storytelling Project by visiting spunstories.net. You can also look for Spun Stories on Facebook and Twitter. All the Best would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands on which we make these stories and pay our respects to elders past, present, and emerging. All the Best is made at FBI Radio in Sydney in association with SYN and 3RRR in Melbourne. This episode was mixed and compiled by Gemma Lipman. Our executive producer is Ryan Pemberton. Mel Chun is our Victorian State Coordinator. The All the Best community coordinators are Chloe Gillespie and Danny Stewart. Our SYN community coordinator is Lee Robinson. Matilda Fay and Angela Moran are our social media producers. And I'm your host, Maddie McQueen. Shining Bird composed our theme music and Annie Hamilton designed the artwork. We're heard across Australia on the Community Radio Network, and we're made possible by the Community Broadcasting Foundation. You can find out more at cbf.org.au. You can find more episodes by searching for All the Best wherever you get your podcasts.